Messages from the house.
February the 22nd, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 422, Joint Conference Committee Report adopted. Mr. President, House Bill 175, Juvenile Citations Notification by Law Enforcement. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number one report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. February the 22nd, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 423, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File 28, Resident Preference Provisions. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number one report on the bill listed above by the votes indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. February the 22nd, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 424, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File 36, Insurance Publication Requirements. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number one report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. February the 22nd, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 425, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File 159, Threats of Bodily Injury or Death. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number one report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 59, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 22nd, 2013, House of Representatives, message concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 18, Telecommunications Internet Protocol Enabled Services. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 134, Private Roads. Ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. House Bill 139, Uniform Trust Code. Ayes 59, excused 1. And House Bill 145, Insurance Coverage of Inherited Enzymatic Disorders. Ayes 49, noes 10, excused 1. February the 22nd, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 419, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 152, Vehicle Accident Reporting. Ayes 37, noes 22, excused 1. February the 22nd, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 420, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 91, Statewide Education Accountability Phase 1. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 1, noes 58, excused 1. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number one to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February the 22nd, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 421, conferees appointed, joint conference committee number one. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number one from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 91. The House conferees are Representative Teeters, Chairman, Representative Stubson, and Bilkrey. Is that it?
Okay. Okay, the Conference Committee for House Bill 91, Statewide Education Accountability, Phase 1, is as follows. Co-Chairman, Landon, and Rothfuss. So we're on this. I'm going to sign a few enrolled acts, and then we'll get to the third reading here. Senate Enrolled Act 52, being original Senate File 52.
Senate Enrolled Act 52, being original Senate File 52, an act relating to motor vehicles.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 52, being original Senate File 52. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 67, being original House Bill 225.
House Enrolled Act number 67, being original House Bill 225, an act relating to brands.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 67, being original House Bill 225. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 68, being original House Bill 31.
House Enrolled Act number 68, being original House Bill 31, an act relating to the Secretary of State.
About to sign House Enrolled Act 68, being original House Bill 31. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 69, being original House Bill 109.
House Enrolled Act number 69, being original House Bill 109, an act relating to interstate shipment of meat and poultry.
About to sign House Enrolled Act 69, being original House Bill 109. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 70, being original House Bill 122.
House Enrolled Act number 70, being original House Bill number 122, an act relating to alcohol.
About to sign House Enrolled Act 70, being original House Bill 122. I have so signed. And House Enrolled Act 71, being original House Bill 161.
House Enrolled Act 71, being original House Bill 161, an act relating to highways.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 71, being original House Bill 161. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floyer, we're at that order of business. Bills on third reading and final passage. Do you have a consent list?
Thank you, Mr. President, and I do. I move the following consent list. Folks, this on your green sheet, we've eliminated House Bill 85. Otherwise, it's the same. I move the following consent list. House Bill 26, Appraisal Management Company Regulation. House Bill 56, Wyoming Pollution Discharge Elimination System. House Bill 115, Wrongful Death, Tolling of Statutes of Limitation. House Bill 163, Adjunct Professors Incentives. House Bill 170, Streamlined Sales Tax, Direct Mail. House Bill 201, Transfer on Death Deed. House Bill 229, Regulation of Natural Gas as a Transportation Fuel.
Would any of the senators like any of the bills removed from the consent list? Hearing none. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? House Bill 26, Appraisal Management Company Regulation. House Bill 56, Wyoming Pollution Discharge Elimination System. House Bill 115, Wrongful Death, Tolling of Statute of Limitations. House Bill 163, Adjunct Professor Incentives. House Bill 170, Streamlined Sales Tax, Direct Mail. House Bill 201, Transfer on Death Deed, and House Bill 229, Regulation of Gas as a Transportation Fuel. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2, excused. Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen, excused. Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins. Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
28 ayes, 2 excused. House Bill 26, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 26, 27 ayes, 1 no, 2 excused. House Bill 56, are there any changes? Perkins, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 56, 25 ayes, 3 noes, 2 excused. House Bill, House Bill 115, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 115, 28 ayes, 2 excused. House Bill 163, are there any changes?
Bebout,
aye to no. Peterson, aye to no.
Perkins,
aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Hines, aye to no.
Hicks,
aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Case, aye to no.
Ross, aye to no.
President Ross, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 163, 17 ayes, 11 noes, 2 excused. House Bill 170, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. Hastert, aye to no. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 170. 25 ayes, 3 noes, 2 excused. House Bill 201, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 201, 28 ayes, 2 excused. House Bill 229, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 229, 28 ayes, 2 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, House Bill 26, House Bill 56, House Bill 115, House Bill 163, House Bill 170, House Bill 201, and House Bill 229 have passed the Senate. House Bill 77, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 77, Wyoming Lottery. It's sponsored by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to lotteries. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have some amendments. The reading clerk will read in. Third reading, amendment number 1 to House Bill 77.
House Bill 77, third reading, amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 10.
Senator Nutty.
Mr. President, I move amendment number 1 to House Bill 77, third reading.
Microphone?
It's on. Maybe you want to move it up a little. There you go.
Mr. President, this amendment fits in beginning on page 40 after we have discussed that $200,000 will be used by the Department of Health programs for the treatment of compulsive gambling disorder and educational programs related to such disorder. After that word disorder, this amendment inserts that the Department of Health will use the information that comes to them either through the treatments or educational programs or otherwise reasonably available to make a baseline study annually thereafter for several years and then every 5 years so that we can identify what effects gambling is having on our state. We've all gotten many emails from people who have experienced negative effects from lotteries in other states, such as Kentucky. But most of the states, it's really hard to have information about what the relationship is. And this study will not be able to establish cause, because that is very difficult to establish. But it can establish a correlation between establishing the lottery and such things as gambling addiction, criminal behaviors, often intended to get money to be able to participate in the lottery, mortgage defaults, failure to pay rent, failures to provide nutrition to dependent children, and other detrimental impacts. Again, all that it can do is to establish a correlation. But this is a window of opportunity we have to be able to do this. Once the lottery is established, then it's hard to really determine that impact on the society. And it is certainly a concern to many people, as we know from the emails we've received. So this amendment is for us to be able to take advantage of that small window of opportunity that we'll have to gather such data. So I ask passage of the amendment.
Discussion. Senator Von Flatern.
Mr. President, I ask the body to resist this amendment. It's asking an agency to do a lot with very little. In fact, we put no money in it for that particular study. It's also asking an agency to draw conclusions, because I don't know how you would quite attribute all the gambling addiction, criminal behavior, mortgage defaults, failure to pay rent, all to any one particular game. I assume if you have a gambling addiction, you have it now, and those issues are present. I do commend my desk mate for having brought this forth, because it is something that needs to be kept in mind. And through all the other reports they do give us, I'm sure that some of this will come out, but to ask them to actually attribute it to the lottery would be a little bit too much to ask. So I ask that you resist the amendment.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. I would also ask you to resist the amendment. I would be in strong support of this amendment if I were convinced that this lottery is gambling. But I cannot find anything anywhere that convinces me of that. I got my DSM out, and of course in the DSM-5, which is our Bible of shrinkdom, that's coming out in May, the title has actually changed. It's now called Disordered Gambling. And there's a whole big laundry list of things that have to be met You have to have at least five of this big long laundry list of things before you can be declared a disordered gambler. And I can't find them in this bill. I can't find the instant gratification. I can't find the cue, as in the lights go off and they flash and they go. I find a bill that says cash only. I find a bill that says 18 years and older. I find a bill that says you go buy a ticket and you wait to see whether or not you have won. That's not instant gratification. That, to my mind, is not gambling. So I did a little literature review myself because I thought, well, it can't just be me. It can't just be my idea. So I did a review of the literature, and I found everywhere I looked no scientific data that shows that lottery play with just the Powerball. Now, we're not talking scratch tabs or anything. Just the kind we're talking about. No scientific data that shows that lottery play can lead directly to gambling addiction. I have the study. It's from a major university and a well-known professor who's the co-director of gambling studies at this particular association, if anybody's interested in it. But I would urge you to resist this because I can't see the correlation between buying a lottery ticket, which in my mind is more like buying a raffle ticket, and I think we've all done that, and the compulsive gambling. If I thought it was, I'd be the first one to say, let's have this amendment. But I don't believe it is, and I would ask you to resist the amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, on and for the amendment, folks, Mr. Chairman, you know, it begs the question, not the one that my good senator to the right of me would love for me to ask right now, but, you know, folks, this is just isn't one ticket. Yeah, you know, there's five spots on there. I think you can pull up to 16 or 20 polls at a time. You can go in and buy a ticket that's $300 or $400, you know, or you can buy several of those. So, you know, you can spend $1,000, $1,500 when you walk up to that cash register, or as much as you want to. And as far as the gratification, folks, if you want to find out if you win, you go to the computer. Yeah, you know, just that nice little computer screen there, you know, it's got all the numbers out there. You can go in there and you can get into every number. You can handicap the numbers. You can get your own strategy. You can say that, my gosh, you know, okay, the evens and the odds are here, and number 16 hit this many weeks ago, and he hit this many days ago, and boy, do we want to hit 16 this time. We're going to go down there, and we're going to buy $1,000 because we know 16's going to hit. We just know it. You know, yeah, folks, you know, this is gambling. It is. And instant gratification, no, but I tell you what, boy, just think of the anticipation of $280 million in your pocket. Wow. Now that's excitement. That's gambling, Mr. President. Yes, we need to find out whether or not these problems are going to exist in our society if we move forward with this bill. Now, there isn't a lot of guidance in this amendment to say how the department's going to do it, but you know, I think that they're smart enough people, they can figure that out on their own and come back with some relative information, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Huh? Question's been called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 77, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment's failed. Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 77. The reading clerk will read it in.
House Bill 77, third reading amendment number 2 to engross copy, page 22, line 15.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I respectfully ask that this be withdrawn at this time.
Without objection, is withdrawn. Third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 77 will be read in.
House Bill 77, third reading amendment number 3 to engross copy, page 22, line 9.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 77. This is a kind of a bookkeeping situation because the bill indicates that monies will be rolled quarterly. But if someone happens to win and they wait 179 of the 180 days, that money can already be rolled into the treasury. So the change here is from paid to earned. So a portion of money, particularly for that prize, can be maintained in the lottery corporation without going to the treasury or to the treasurer, thereby enabling them to pay off a ticket if it was to wait the almost the entire 180 days. And I urge the support.
Discussion? All those in favor of third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 77, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That amendment's been adopted. Third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 77 will be read in.
House Bill 77, third reading amendment number 4 to engrossed copy, corrected copy, page 1, line 10.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 77. Members of the Senate, what this amendment does, it goes into the bill and it sunsets it and said that effective July 1st, 2021, that this entire act will be repealed. Mr. President, the reason I bring this to the body, and there's been a lot of discussion about the pros and cons of this. I plan on voting for this bill. I think that there's a lot of reasons in my district and people that support it. And there's a lot of indication that it will be cost-effective and make money for the state of Wyoming for things that we need. However, we're not sure. And so I've always felt that when you deal with legislation like this, it's a lot tougher if you have a sunset date in there to keep it ongoing and have to repeal the sunset date rather than come back in and kill a program that isn't working. So, Mr. President, that's the reason I bring this. There's some discussion about to really make this work, you need a 10-year period of time. I made this for 8 years, and, Mr. President, I think there's incentive there. If people want to make this work, they ought to be able to make it work in 8 years. If it's not going to work in 8 years, then it ought to be repealed. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion, Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. President. Just one question on the technicality of this. What happens if there are outstanding tickets on July 1st, 2021, we have no ability to pay on those tickets, even though they were winners.
Senator Von Flader.
The good senator from KC brings up a very valid point, and I don't have an answer for that. But I will tell you that one of the reasons that I'm hoping that this amendment is defeated is that most contracts for these multi-state lotteries are done on 10-year contracts. So if we do it on 8 years with the chance that this could be killed in 8 years or go forward, depending on whether we extend the limits or not, sunset date. But the problem would be that we would be dealing with vendors that would come to us and say, we work on 10 years on leases of equipment. How do we do this? So we'll put that added amount of money in there, as you all know, if you take a short-term versus long-term lease. So I think we need to defeat this and let the market set it up. Although I will mention that there is a couple of reports in there, so we will be keeping our eye on this program all the way through its existence. But the 8 years will really, and I used the word before and I'll use it again, will handicap the program.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, at first blush I thought that this was a rather harmless amendment, but in fact it could gut the entire effort on the lottery. Keep in mind that the 10-year lease, the reason that those leases are 10 years is because if you've ever been to any gas stations or any place that sells lottery tickets in other states, there are always computer setups. So there's hardware networks and there's software networks, and especially the hardware networks are set up on a 10-year payback schedule. So it without knowing it, if you didn't know this, you could sit there and say, no problem, just make it 8 years instead of 10. Well, that's not the way the payout system on these things work. And in addition to that, the lottery itself, you have to get the corporation set up, ready to go. That lottery isn't even going to start probably for at least a year from now and maybe even longer than that. So we're actually not even making it 8 years. We're making it 7 years or possibly 6.5 years. To put a drop-dead date in the bill right now, I think, would probably doom the bill.
Further discussion? Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to answer a question from my colleague from KC, You know, my answer would be that in any corporation, and this will be a corporation, there's a dissolution process you go through that you determine what your assets and liabilities are and that you have enough assets in there to cover your liabilities. I would think this would be the same way.
Okay. Question is, shall third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 77 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment's failed. Third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 77. Reading clerk will read it in.
House Bill 77, third reading amendment number 5 to engross copy. Delete the Von Flatiron third reading amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 77. Folks, I'm bringing this back. We talked about it earlier, and that is what happens to the proceeds from this lottery. And I've given it more thought and would like to ask you to reconsider this and to adopt the amendment. You know, for those folks that think that this is going to be the salvation to the cities, towns, and counties, it's simply not going to be any salvation. What we're learning now is it's not going to be enough funds to make any difference. We're still going to be back here trying to help them out. We have no proposal with respect to how the distribution or allocation should be. Should it be done by city? Should it be done by county? By source of revenue? What about folks that are traveling from Laramie to go over and shop and pick up lottery tickets in Cheyenne? And in the end of the day, by the time you distribute it out, it's a fairly insignificant amount. And whatever the burdens are that we're going to live with for this lottery program, they'll go on forever. And they're significant, whatever they are. And what we have an opportunity to do is say, look, let's put the money in the Common School Permanent Land Fund. Whatever the amount is, it will accumulate. Our children, our grandchildren, and generations to come will take the income off of it. We've done, as I pointed out, we've really done nothing to enhance the value of that account since the time of statehood. And for this account, if it's $5 million, $7 million, or $16 million, it makes a difference. It accumulates, and as it accumulates, you'll see the earnings. And if over 10 years it accumulates to 10 years and it's 17, you got $170 million, and it makes a difference. And at that time, you'll be receiving the income off it for the rest of statehood. So you have an opportunity to simply take the revenues, earmark it to a place where you know it'll accumulate, will make a difference, as opposed to just seeing it dissipate through the sands of the cities, towns, and counties who haven't asked for it. They're not coming down and saying, hey, do this, and by the way, that'll stop us coming down and asking for money. I'd urge your support.
Discussion, Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. President, on and against the amendment, this money should go to the cities and counties so they can use it for the citizens that are here today, and the citizens that are here today can see the benefits from the lottery and not future legislatures deciding what to do with this money. Thank you.
Senator Ron Flatiron.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also ask you to resist this amendment. You know, folks, this could make $12. It could make $20 million. We really don't know. But within the bill, there is an allocation system, and it will be evenly distributed back. It's based on the sales tax that you've generated in the past, and as a percentage of the whole, you'll get that much back as a percentage of this allocation. It's something that the cities, towns, and counties could use right now. I know you could in your fill your own potholes in your own town at the moment. I don't see putting in savings where if we put $1 million in, we may save $50,000 in return. 5 to 8%, whatever that return is. There is an allocation system within the bill. I think it's a good way to leave it, and that's one of the reasons another amendment was withdrawn, is just to make sure it goes to the cities, towns, and counties, and the ones that are asked, and my city and town and county have asked for it, so I can say that.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I would encourage the body to vote aye on this amendment. And for a lot of reasons, the majority floor leader put out, but just one other thing to think about, and assuming this program is successful, and 3 or 4 years out, it's 5 or 6 or 7 or $10 million, pick a number, But then for whatever reason, that goes down. So the cities, towns, and counties are used to the revenue stream. Now all of a sudden, it's not there. Are they going to come to the legislature and ask to be backfilled? The flip side of that is, you know, the permanent common school land fund is something that we really don't have any way other than the interest it generates, which we spend generally, to grow. And that's something that I think if you look back at what these funds have done for Wyoming, they've been incredible. If we hadn't had the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, look where we'd be today. Here's a way to put some money in, if this worked, that really could build for the future. So I think this is a good amendment. I would ask the Senate to support it.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, rising on and against this amendment, just as pointed out on page 22, this has already been promulgated as it will be a means to help the cities and the counties. I've never seen a tax thing like this or a program like this that's been supported widely like this that all the people bought into, and one of the reasons they bought into it was because the money would go to the counties and to the cities. I think this defeats the major purpose of this. These people were said and represented that. If we want to change it later on, we can. But I think we should keep with our word and do what we said we do, use it for the cities and the counties. Please.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President, on and for the amendment. Mr. President, I've been a long-time supporter, you know, being one of the number in here that our former county commissioners have been a long supporter of cities, towns, and counties and the work that they do, you know, try and keep local control in those things. But, Mr. President, I wonder about this bill, and I think the body's made it clear where this bill's going to go and what's going to happen with it. But as you think about this amendment, a couple things you want to think about. That kind of back up, I believe, what the majority floor leader said. Mr. President, I went back and looked at North Dakota lottery statements that were issued, the financial statements for the lottery that were issued by North Dakota, which is the one that we keep referring to mostly. North Dakota has about 700,000 people. We have about 560,000 in our state. So we're all guessing about how much money is going to be generated by this. One thing that we're doing differently than North Dakota is that we're not doing the instant winners. And as near as I can figure, I went out and looked, and they have it broken down by revenue with respect to the various lottery tickets that are sold. And the near as I could figure, there are five different lottery tickets that were sold in the years ending 6/30/2009 through 6/30/2011. And roughly the state's making between $22 and $25 million in gross revenue over the course, Mr. President. When I look at that, in each year, if we cull out there appear to be out of the five, two of them that are instant winner tickets, Mr. President, and we pull out in those 3 years, that varies between $5 million to $6 million of the total revenue comes from the instant lottery winners. I think if we apply that same model, which we do here, and there's no way to tell exactly what the expenses would be, and obviously it'll decrease expenses associated with those sales. But I think when we look at that, we've heard those numbers, and what I gather from this, Mr. President, if we're not doing the instant ticket winners, which are prohibited by this bill, really what we're talking about is somewhere in the neighborhood of $18 to $19 million of gross revenue, $6 million less than we're going to receive. As that shuffles down to the bottom line, I think in the end that we're talking about revenues to the bottom line. While it's not my guess is it would probably reduce revenues roughly 50%. There's not going to be one for one, but there are going to be some economies of scale that are lost. But you're probably talking about $2 million or less than that would go to cities, towns, and counties, would be my best guess, Mr. President. And the reason I think why that may seem significant, when you spread that among the cities, towns, and counties, that's not much money. And I think that what happens is, you know, when Laramie or Casper or Afton gets its $1,500 or its $1,000 check from that distribution of that money, you know, you can go fill that pothole, but it's not going to be very far. So you look, you know, is there something to do with this money that if in the end this passes through, how do you make this worth something? So it's value. You can create some value out of this in the end, and I think this is one way to do it. The other thing I would submit to those who think that this is going to benefit cities, towns, and counties, I ask you to think about this.
Mr. President, when we come down here and we look for our next direct distribution to cities, towns, and counties, I can guarantee you, when we come down here, there's going to be two things that are going to say, and it'll be justification to reduce the direct distributions. And that is going to be, one, they're great beneficiaries of the fuel tax, and two, we're taking care of them with lotteries. I went back and reviewed a lot of literature, too, Mr. President, and there's an interesting phenomena. Generally, with about exceptions, one or two states, those states that contribute the proceeds of their lotteries to education as a whole fund education less than states that don't. So when you look at the total amount of money that goes to education in state, those who fund it through education fund it less, with about the exception of Massachusetts, fund it less than those states that do. And I, Mr. Chairman, I would extrapolate that to look at cities, towns, and counties. My guess is that this will be held as a, if it goes to cities, towns, and counties, it'll be held as a club for a reason not to make additional distributions to cities, towns, and counties. At the end of the day, I think cities, towns, and counties will do worse if this amendment doesn't go through. And therefore, with that tortured reasoning, Mr. President, I ask your favorable consideration.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Folks, we had a lot of discussion about schools when we went through the budget. And the one thing that I want you to remember is that this next biennium, and probably all the bienniums forward, we're going to have to take some money out of the general fund or someplace to fund schools. We're going to be about somewhere between $16-18 million, $50 or $60 million short in 2017-18. So we need to start diversifying how we get money into this fund. So in the long run, we know that we can fund schools without having to go back in and backfill it with the general funds. Now, hopefully, this will be successful beyond our wildest dreams, and we won't have to think about going into general funds for education. And it is really just salt and pepper out across the cities and towns at what the prospective amount of money that's in there. And I have to agree with my good colleague from Natrona is that yeah, when you decide how you're going to fund cities, towns, and counties, you look at all their revenue sources, their ability to pay their bills, and what we're distributing out to them. And you really take all those things into consideration. The lottery will be taken into consideration. But more importantly is that we know with the enrollment growth that's coming into schools that there's even going to be a bigger demand on our school foundation program. And if you really want to make a long-term difference with the lottery proceeds, this is a great place to do it because you know that money is going to have to be used for education. We've got a constitutional directive to do that, and this is going to go directly to that. And we know we're going to be short in 17 and 18 in those years out there, and we're even going to be shorter 8-10 years from now because of enrollment growth. So this is a prudent thing to do.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. President, rising in favor of the amendment, I think that the points have been made, but I want to make a couple other points. Whatever we do in the school foundation program, pretty much, and you can talk this number generally around the state, but about 65% of what happens is mineral-related to local assessed valuation, and roughly 62% of the funding in the school foundation program comes from local ad valorem assessments. That's going down, folks. We hit our peak in natural gas in 2009. We're producing less gas today than we were in 2009. Coal, we know what's happening to coal. Coal's under attack. The school foundation program is not that solvent out there. You get out there a couple of bienniums, and we got some problems. What I like about this amendment is it's like we're creating, almost like we're creating an endowment fund for the future of the schools by feeding this money into it. And you have the ability to see that compounding effect that you get when you do that. So I think this is a good amendment for the future of what's going to go on with schools. And I was here along with some other people when we were robbing money from other places to fund schools. I think this is a good amendment. I ask that you support it.
Well, just a sec. Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, We've done a wonderful job of talking out of both sides of our mouths. It's going to bring no money in, but we still want to take a little of it and put it away. And, you know, since I've been down here, we have fought for the cities and towns for the small end of the money. And it's been a steep fight. It's a tough one to do. Our towns, particularly the smaller ones, it's tough. Dimes are dimes, and you can subtract it away. But if it's coming there, at least it's coming there, and we know that. We went through the sales tax deal, and I've heard the arguments about it being all backfilled. But it didn't backfill in little towns that just had grocery stores. And whatever they can get that's some type of income to a fixed income person, a penny's a penny. I'd encourage you to defeat this amendment and leave this as it was. This bill was structured from the start to go to cities and towns. And that's where a lot of the support for this bill came from. It's generated out of cities and towns. I'd really support you to.
Anybody else before the sponsor takes a second time? Hearing none. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Folks, the cities, towns, and counties did not come down and lobby for this as a source of revenue. And I've been struck by the notion that we're talking about almost $26 million of your gross state product going out on an annual basis, and it looks at most we'll get $6 to $7 million back in salaries and revenues. That's $26 million that we're leaving that's leaving our state. But one of the colleagues said, "Wait a minute. That's $26 million that may be going out right now because folks are going out and buying their tickets. Who knows whether it's $26 million or whatever it is." What the cities, towns, and counties asked was to support the lottery to keep their shoppers in town. That's what they were looking for. They were looking to keep folks from Cheyenne and Laramie, Sheridan, from driving out of the state to buy their tickets. And what they're hoping to see are higher sales tax revenues in their communities as a consequence to having the lottery. Fair enough. That's their benefit, and that's what they came here to ask. I doubt the folks up in Hewlett or anybody else thought that, hey, this is going to somehow fill even one pothole. But what's interesting about it is I see what the cities, towns are going to get out of it. They're going to get a bunch of resources to bring their shoppers back in the state. But who's going to pay for the drug addictions, state of Wyoming? Who's going to pay for lost houses, things like that? The Medicaid, Medicare system, the state of Wyoming. So the state is being asked to pick up all the liabilities, all the social costs, and the cities, towns are saying, of course they're saying, this is great. We bring our shoppers back, and anything that happens that's wrong goes on your ledger. And we had a general fund amendment that would may have been appropriate to say, look, we pick up the liability. We ought to be paying for it. We see what the cities, towns, and counties are getting, and folks wanting to do it, fair enough. This is a way of saying the state is, there is a cost to the state of having this program, and the state should share and receive those proceeds. Then the perfect place to put them is in an endowment account, as we've talked about before, an account that lives forever and will be there to help educate our kids and maybe teach them that better math than to go out and buy lottery tickets. I urge your support.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 77 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment's failed.
Division.
Division. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed? Amendment's passed by the skinny skin of it.
You need some earwax later.
Third reading amendment number 6, House Bill 77. The reading clerk will read it in.
House Bill 77, third reading amendment number 6, to engross copy, page 22, line 23.
Senator.
Be withdrawn.
All right. Good. All right. Any further discussion on House Bill 77? Well, no. Senator Baseball.
Hey, thank you, Mr. President. That was my question. What does this have to do with baseball? Mr. President, I haven't said much about this bill. I'm concerned about it. We are at a crossroads. This is historical for this chamber. We are setting a course here that I am particularly not in favor of and quite strongly oppose for a number of reasons. Probably the most, I come from a pretty conservative part of our state. Out of the 200 or 300 emails I've gotten on this bill alone, 2 have been in favor and all the rest have been opposed. And these come from business owners, the regular citizens. And they have the same concerns that I do, Mr. President. The concerns that, as I've served down here in this good body, I've seen program after program after program, subsidies, entitlements. You know the list better than I. Food stamps, reduced school lunches. Everything has a cost to it. We participate fully in those programs, and so do our citizens. And I get this image in my mind of standing in line at a grocery store, going through the checkout with my sack of groceries, and somebody pulls out food stamps in front of me, pays for their groceries with a lot of those food stamps, and pulls out their wallet and pulls out a $10 or $20 bill and buys lotto tickets with their own income. One of my emails that were in favor of this bill said, "You can't tell us how to spend our money." Well, that's true. But a lot of our citizens are on the dole. And it's not their money. It's your money. It's my money. It's our money. And this is the wrong message. This is the wrong message to send to say, we'll subsidize you here and we'll let you spend our money in other ways. Now, some might argue in this room that, well, if we're getting some of that money back in profits from the lotto. Might be true. Very small amount. I mean, I'd much rather prefer talking about a state income tax, a fair tax. This idea or concept, it's a great idea. It's a great concept if I were a marketing genius and king trying to get more money from the poor peasants working out in the field. I would celebrate with my brain trust in celebrating this program of how to get more money from the poor folks out there in the field working hard and saying, we'll make it fun, we'll make it exciting, we'll prey on their hope. It's the wrong direction. I've often had pride in this body being the more sensible part of our good building here. A lot of people in our state depend on this body right here in this room to clean up, to fix up, to repair, to correct what happens down here. And I feel like we're going the wrong way with this bill, and I would urge your opposition and defeat of this bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thought I had this bill killed the other day in the chair, but that didn't work out. You know, we've done some good things down here, the reserves, the trust, that we put together, and I think the coming generations will look back on us and say thank you for doing that. When all the minerals run out and the gas run out and all of that, they'll thank us that we set things up and built a solid economy for this state, built a reserve for them, built them something to work from. But, Mr. President, I think with this one, they'll probably look back at us and generations to come and the problems they have from it and say, what were they thinking against the bill?
Question is, oops.
The good senator from Bighorn was exactly right. This is a regressive tax. Granted, it's a voluntary regressive tax. No matter how you slice it, it is gambling because it is entirely a lot in luck. Has no skill whatsoever. So it's gambling. Don't try to say just because there isn't bells and whistles that it isn't gambling, you're fooling yourself. It is gambling. Mr. President,
I hope it's successful because I think it's going to move forward as far as the proponents are proposing. But, Mr. President, it's probably the wrong thing to do in the wrong time, and the wrong thing to do for the state. Unfortunately, it's not in the form that it should be in. There's a lot of problems with the security issues. A lot of times we move forward on stuff if we know it's going to pass and we don't have the opportunity and not allowed the opportunity to make the bill in better form. We've had some amendments that have got on that I think that helped the bill in some way, but structurally, in a lot of different ways, there's still a lot of problems with the way this bill is put together. If we're really serious about moving something like this along and doing it right, it really shouldn't be just a personal bill. We should take the time and put this bill into an interim topic, into the right committee, make sure it's structurally right, make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. We know the will of this body. Everybody's going to be around here next year. You move it forward and do it right. That's the way we should do this legislation, Mr. President. And I'm asking you folks for a no vote so we have the opportunity to do this right, because we know what the will of the body is on both sides. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator Coe?
President, very briefly, the citizens of this state want this bill. I saw a poll here in the last 12 months. 62-63% of the people support in that poll support this lottery. It's the right thing to do. We've tried and tried and tried to pass it here. Now's the time. I urge that you support the bill.
Any further discussion? Questions been called. House Bill 77, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2, excused. Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard. Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Christensen excused. Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas? Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Bonslatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 18 ayes, 10 noes, 2 excused.
House Bill 77. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members elected to the Senate, House Bill 77 has passed the Senate.
Back here.
Picked up a vote. House Bill 85, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 85, Municipal Jurisdiction Extraterritorial Authority, sponsored by Representative Moniz. An act relating to municipalities, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have some amendments. The reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 85.
House Bill 85, third reading amendment number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 1.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, without objection, I withdraw third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 85.
Without objection, it is withdrawn. Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 85. Reading clerk will read it in.
House Bill 85, third reading amendment number 2 to engross copy. Delete the Rothfuss third reading amendment.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, without objection, I wish to withdraw amendment number 2 to House Bill 85.
Without objection, it is withdrawn. House Bill 85. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2, excused. Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard. Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen excused. Co.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins. Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern,
no.
President Ross,
aye.
Closing vote, closing vote closed. 26 ayes, 2 noes, 2 excused.
House Bill 85, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the Senate, House Bill 85 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills that start with a G.
Senator Dockstader, would you please put your ornament on top, please? All right. With that, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion's carried. Senator Nutting.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Members of the Senate, we have another visitor up there in front. Former Representative Ross Dirks is with us today. Ross, wave your hand. Wait, there you go.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 6. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 6, Solid Waste Disposal District Board Terms, sponsored by Representative Gingery, an act relating to solid waste disposal districts. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman.
Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does do so. Will the due pass recommendation on House Bill 6? There are no standing committee amendments, and Senator Christensen was going to handle the bill.
Oh,
I'll yield to Senator Dockstader.
Thank you.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The good senator from almost Idaho had to leave to be with his son with wrestling today, and so he handed me a packet of bills. House Bill 6, Solid Waste Disposal, District Board Members. What this does, members of the Senate, it removes the term limit required for solid waste disposal districts. Under current law, you can only serve 3 terms. This bill removes the term limits. And county commissioners still have the ability to reappoint their members. So if there are new people that want to be on the board, the commissioners would have that choice. So a good senator from almost Idaho, if he was here, he'd probably call it a local control bill. The reason for this bill is that there are some small solid waste districts that are having trouble finding people that are willing to serve on their boards. One example is the Alta Solid Waste Disposal District. They're having replacements there, trouble finding replacements. Also, as I understand it here with this information, there are some districts such as Fremont that have a complicated system, and they need to retain their experienced board members, so they'd like the ability to keep them beyond their term limits. So that's what House Bill 6 does. It allows them to continue on and continue in their terms. And if they've got good people serving, they can keep them on the board. If they've got people that are well-informed, they can keep them on the board, and that's the reason for the bill.
Senator Case.
Madam Chairman, I'm just sorting through my book trying to figure out all these G bills. So I'm not really standing.
All right. Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, when it comes to solid waste disposal, when you got to go, you got to go.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Himes' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 6, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 6 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 7. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 7, Sanitary Facilities for Motion Picture Operators, sponsored by Representative Gingery, and Act Relating to Public Health and Safety. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senator Barner, Burns, Christian, and Driscoll, excuse Senator Kraft, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill Number 7, Sanitary Facilities for Motion Picture Operators. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'm noticing a theme in these bills. For a further explanation of the bill, I thought I was going to call on Senator Driscoll. I don't know why Senator Dockstader is standing up. I guess when you got to go, you got to go.
Senator Driscoll.
Is House Bill 007. It's a license to kill bill. It is a cleanup bill that gets rid of facilities in old hand-cranked movie theaters, makes it where you no longer have to have flush toilets and facilities in these rooms that they show the movies in. With that, I'd stand for questions and ask for the passage of this absolutely wonderful bill.
Is there any discussion? Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, I would just ask the body to flush card on this bill.
Good question.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't have anything pithy to say, but I do have some people that live in my district that own motion. I've been hanging around the majority floor leader too long. They own and operate motion picture facilities, and literally this thing does. As much as I'd like to vote against this bill, this bill does increase the cost of construction when you're building new movie theaters. Because this is in here, they're having to create these johns up in the projector rooms. And the irony, Madam Chairman, is there's nobody in the projector rooms these days. It's all digital and run by computer, but they're still having to build toilets in these movie theaters. And these guys need some relief.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 7, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 7 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 8.
House Bill Number 8, Child Abuse Reporting Requirements, sponsored by Representative Gingery, an act relating to Child Protective Services. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hickson, Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 8, Child Abuse Reporting Requirements. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd like it read in at this time.
House Bill 8, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 14.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go ahead and move the standing committee amendment, and I would like to yield the floor to Senator Nutting to go through the bill and the standing committee amendment.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In Wyoming, the failure to report elder abuse has a penalty, but there is no penalty for not reporting child abuse. Child abuse is happening in every corner of Wyoming. It's happening in our cities. Children today are being abused. Under this bill, everyone needs to report suspected child abuse. But this bill does provide for mandated reporters. Those mandated reporters are law enforcement, child care providers, Department of Family Service workers, teachers, and health care providers. The failure to report suspected child abuse has a penalty of 1 year or $1,000 or both. Mr. Chairman, the standing committee amendment has been moved. What the amendment does is to specify that these mandated reporters are mandated to report during the performance of their duties. That occurs on page 2, line 14, and page 2, line 22. I ask the body to pass the standing committee amendment.
Thank you, Senator. We are on the standing committee amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Question being called on the amendments. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill Number 8, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment has passed. Senator Nutting.
I ask the body to pass Senate File 8.
Thank you, Senator Nutting. A discussion on House Bill 8. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, on and against this bill, I mean, it is a very difficult process to find yourself as a mandated reporter. And, in other states, most of you would be a mandated reporter. Some attorneys are mandated reporters. Some places we pick out these groups of people, and then we put really a hard burden on them. And these issues of whether to report, when to report your neighbor because he spanked the son too hard. Believe me, those are the issues. Whether or not you have adult high school kids that are being disciplined, and do you have to report them? Frankly, I have not heard anybody complain about the existing law, or that somehow it's being abused, or somehow that this needs greater protection, and that we need to increase the fine by $1,000. If there is, then I would expect that the select committees or the judiciary committee can stand up and said, oh, yeah, this has been a problem. It's been reported to us. But what we have is a single member putting in a bill that says, I'd like to see a change. That's not how we should be increasing penalties and imposing mandated reporter requirements.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Senator Lannan.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I had three on the over and under, but I rise not to filibuster. I actually do have some serious concerns about this bill, and this is one of those circumstances that you write about in your emails. Who could be against child abuse reporting requirements in the title? But when you really look on page 2, I've got to join the majority floor leader in having some real concerns. I don't know what this means to my day job. You know, there's so many times that I'm in a gymnasium full of thousands of folks. And I watch parents drag little guys by the ear out of that place over and over and over, because they probably need to be drug out of there for a minute and talked to out in the parking lot. And, you know, I just think about all those circumstances that I've run into these past many years where I have seen parents dealing with children. I've seen aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas dealing with children. And, you know, I tell you what, folks, I don't think this bill is a good idea. On and against the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, I have some serious question about paragraph A with regards to the change of the language. I think that there, I'm not sure what this is. We have a whole body of law out there about what reasonable cause is, but yet I don't know what sufficient knowledge which a prudent and cautious person in similar circumstances would have to believe. I struggle with that language. I'm not sure. Perhaps we'll hear from the good chairman from judiciary or whatever. But I really struggle with that language, folks. And so I'm not really in favor of this bill.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'll try and address the concerns. Remember, Mr. Chairman, the language in subparagraph A, other than the new language that's been reported, that's underlined, that's all existing language. We've had that on the books for years. Whether it's worked or not, I don't know. I think the other thing, you know, we hear whether we're dragging our wives out by their hair or kids by the ear or whatever we do, what this bill is aiming at is something quite different. What it's saying is if there was a situation that went on for years at a large university to our east, and what it's saying is, folks, you can't tolerate that kind of thing. Parents taking care of their kids or disciplining their kids, if you want. We've had the required reporting on our books for years. You know what? It hasn't been abused, and I don't anticipate it's going to change much because of this. But if institutions, be they law enforcement, universities or community colleges or schools, social service agencies, knowingly tolerate something that's absolutely wrong for a period of time in a series of incidents, we want to have something to call them to task on. It's inexcusable to have that sort of thing happen. Does it happen? I honestly don't know. I don't know. I don't think it does, but then I worked another bill in another area this year. I said, I don't think Wyoming's got a problem. Shoot, it turned out we really did have a problem. We really did. And I said, no, we don't have a, whatever it is, human trafficking problem. Never heard of it. Well, it's a substantial problem, particularly in a few communities. I don't know whether there's a problem out there in these specified populations, but if there is, I hope this brings an end to it. Again, I'm not worried about parents disciplining their children. We've had that law in the books for many, many years. But it's a systemic application of that kind of bad behavior that we're trying to put a stop to. And that's what this bill does. Question?
Senator Nutting.
Mr. Chairman, this is not directed at how somebody disciplines their children. Absolutely, frivolous charges are made, and those are dealt with by counseling on the phone, and that is all it amounts to. In our local paper last week, there was an article about a father who said that he had just pushed his daughter against a wall. Well, he pushed her into the wall hard enough that she has lifetime critical injuries with paralysis on the right side of her body. Did somebody see something earlier that could have protected that child or prevented that child from being paralyzed for life? Recently, there was an article about a 19-month-old boy who was beaten to death. and he was beaten hard enough that his intestines were ruptured. That doesn't happen because somebody disciplines more strictly than someone else. There was an article in today's paper about a woman whose infant had been left in a car and frozen to death. And it was found that she had had two infants die 5 years ago. Was there something there that someone could have seen that maybe could have prevented these deaths? Oftentimes there is. I ask a favorable vote on the bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what gives me such great concern about this bill, and that is, unfortunately, some bad things happen to good people. And then you get a bunch of people saying, well, geez, I wonder if somebody should have caught that earlier. How about that teacher up there? He's a mandated reporter, and maybe he saw him being pulled out of the year 3 years ago, and now we're going to put him in jail for a year. And I know that there's a whole trend around our other states saying we don't trust our law enforcement, child protection, educational folks to do their job, and so we're going to make them exposed to one-year crimes and a $1,000 fine. You know, I've been through mandated reporting classes because I'm required to do it in the state of Oregon, and I look at those things and I think, you know, the great thing about Wyoming is we seem to have a better way of doing things. I mean, I can't imagine anybody that my neighbor is just standing by and watching something bad happen. But there's also a social cost to creating these laws so that every time something bad happens, we have to say, well, it wasn't the parents' fault. Let's start thinking about all the people who we should put in jail because maybe they could have done something years before. That's not good either.
Any further discussion? Mr. President.
Thank you. Members of the Senate, I have to apologize. I was reading from the original bill instead of the engrossed copy, so my comments with regards to reasonable cause, it's in the bill. And I apologize to the body for my comments previously.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the question I have is on page 3, line 9, health care providers. My question is an inquiry as far as would a counselor be considered a health care provider? I know several years ago when I was on labor and health, the clergy came to us and wanted to be counselors as far as, oh, you know, folks that have a little bit of a drinking problem or some other social problems or something that they could lend some guidance to them. And we included the clergy, I believe, at that time as far as a counselor. And now I'm wondering whether or not we've swept that particular class of health care providers, if they would be considered a health care provider, in here as a mandatory reporter. And so that's just an inquiry as far as that class of individuals.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Further discussion before the sponsor rises? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try and respond to that question also. Only if they're a clergyman and a licensed health care provider. In other words, clergy is a clergy. Isn't under the bill.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Additional discussion before the question. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Chairman. With the bill, you know, I went back and looked at the existing language, and we've imposed this duty on any person, which you see there. And, you know, I mean, you start off on page 1, line 15, and you can see the existing language of subsection A is entirely included there. And what we're doing there is adding mandated or other person. And quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, I think mandated reporters also qualify as any person. So it seems a little bit duplicative there. But when you get down to it, what we've got is we've got a requirement under statute that any person who has, knows, or has reasonable cause to believe or suspect that a child's been abused or neglected has got a responsibility to report that. Then in subsection B of the existing law, which is not recounted in the bill, this is where we kind of get into this idea of mandated reporting, Mr. Chairman.
If a person reporting child abuse or neglect is a member of the staff of a medical or other private or public institution, school, facility, or agency, he shall notify the person in charge or his designated agent as soon as possible, who is thereupon also responsible to make the report or cause the report to be made. And then it goes on further to say that that nothing in there relieves you of the obligation to report this unless they are already sure a report that's been made. What this bill does is it now takes that duty, which is probably enforceable in a civil case, it sticks into the criminal realm. It makes anybody who's now a mandated reporter a criminal for failing to report, and in this case, knowingly report. So you've got this obligation if they have reason to know, and then if they have reasonable cause, which is a difficult task in and of itself. They have reasonable cause, and then apparently under E in the bill, which is on page 2, line 14, if you have reasonable cause and then you don't report, that's a knowing failure, and you're toast. If you take the example of my good friend from Natrona County, in his example, if he sees, and quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, I read the police blotter quite often in my local newspaper, and you see a number of things that, quite frankly, were acceptable corporal punishment when I was a child, are now child abuse. They are cited and charged with child abuse. Remember, I took one over to my mom and showed it to her and said, "See, I always knew you abused as a child." She said, "Shut up, or I'll do it again." But, Mr. Chairman, my mother's a saint, and believe me, whatever she gave us three boys, we all had coming, and are the better for it. But now we've got this making this a crime, and then we look who the mandated reporters are. We've got law enforcement, child care providers, child protection, and other social services, which I imagine are very quick to report. Then you go down and you look at, and the two that concern me the most in here, probably the three, are law enforcement, educational institutions, and healthcare providers. Law enforcement, I think, have some training and can probably deal with this, but in particular, look at educational institutions. Look at our teachers, athletic directors, may or may not have the training necessary to do this. We ask our teachers to come early, stay late. We ask them to teach. We ask them to feed. And because some parents don't feed, they have to watch during school. We take our teachers and we do all kinds of things with them. With the events of the last few months, now we're talking about arming them and making them local police force to protect the very buildings they're in. And now if they don't report this, then we're going to hold them as a crime. And the problem I have with that is when you do this, what you'll have is you will have to, in order to not be a criminal, report. And if you grew up with kids, I remember taking my son talking outside the store, was busy spinning in circles one day at the grocery store, and he fell down and hit his head on the bricks on the store. He had to get stitches. We took him to the emergency room, and of course, as anticipated, I had to go through the third degree. To satisfy them that I hadn't beaten my kid and caused that myself. While I was sitting there, there was a lady came in with another child who had a large welt on the eye. And Mr. Chairman, I thought they were going to haul her to jail. Turns out it was a bee sting. But before she could get it out, they were very, very close to having her arrested and hauled away. And that was without mandatory reporting. If you pass this bill, they have to report anything they suspect at risk of going to jail. Is that really what we want our teachers, our law enforcement, and our healthcare providers to do?
Thank you, Senator Perkins. Additional discussion. Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 8, please say aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please rise. Opposed, please rise.
Mr. President, what time did you have?
We're getting there. Pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2 excused. Anderson District 28?
No.
Barnard? Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case? No. Christensen excused. Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert? Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Johnson? Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Platern?
No.
President Ross?
Barnard?
Excuse.
Closing vote. Hastert, no to aye. Closing. Vote closed. 4 ayes, 22 noes, and 4 excused.
House Bill 8, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 15. See if we can do to it what we did to the last one.
House Bill 15, Violent Injuries Reporting Requirements, sponsored by Representative Gingery. An act relating to reporting of violent injuries. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Anderson, 28. Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. May I privilege the floor?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the Senate, I'd like to introduce an old friend of mine. He was my speaker and Senator Hines' speaker when we were in the House, and he's here to watch the real action in the Wyoming legislature, that being the Senate, Rory, the Senate. Former Speaker Rory Cross. Rory, welcome to the Senate.
You have heard the reading of House Bill 15. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 15 do pass through a standing committee amendment, and I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 15, Standing Committee Number 1, to engross copy, page 2, line 11.
Madam Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Madam Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment does two things that are somewhat related. When you look at lines 11 and 12, there's some verbiage in there that turns out not to mean very much. It covers the whole waterfront. And I suppose this bill must have been written by an attorney who got paid by the word at one point. And the Labor Committee decided that was unnecessary verbiage and took it out. The other thing we did uses both the term injury or wound and other places. So we just added that in after injury, Madam Chairman. I urge adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Are you ready for the question on Amendment Number 1? All of those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 15, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment has carried. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, there is no Senate sponsor on this bill, and since I have a volunteer, I'm happy to yield to Senator Kraft for an explanation of the bill.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Madam Chairman. I had no idea I was a volunteer, but having been pressed into service on this bill, I do want to explain about it. It's a violent injury reporting, but there are a couple of things that are really important to note here. And the first real important thing to note about House Bill 15 is this is a voluntary reporting requirement. The word may is used in here. When it's my understanding that when the bill was being drafted, a number of medical professionals had great concerns with a mandatory report. So the bill has been amended that the doctor has discretion. The doctor does not have to report. It's a may. The other thing that's important is the victim has to agree to the reporting. And the reason for this was we heard concerns raised that frequently victims of sexual assault or domestic violence might not seek treatment if they knew it was going to be reported. So this gives the victim the power to say, no, I don't want this reported. The reason for the bill, the reason is that without it, a doctor can't report because of the HIPAA law. HIPAA requires that patient health information be kept confidential unless a state has a law for a violent injury reporting. That's the only way. So what this piece of legislation would do is provide that necessary exception from HIPAA that would allow doctors or other medical personnel to report to law enforcement a violent injury if they deemed that to be the most appropriate course of action and if the victim agreed to that. So it allows them to report without violating HIPAA. That's the reason for the bill, and I would urge your support.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, on and against the bill. Folks, you know, being a lawyer, I know how these bills get drafted. You try a case, you don't like the outcome, you sit with your colleagues and say, geez, wouldn't it nice if we pass a bill? It's interesting that when you look over on page one, it says authorized reporting to violent injuries. And then you have the HIPAA issues that you see. But take a look over on page three. Any healthcare practitioner authorized to report shall make a report. Now, that's just sneaky. You take the bill that says you're authorized to do it. Of course, if you're authorized, you shall do these things, and the minimum report is there. Folks, this isn't all rocket science. If you're a healthcare provider and somebody comes in like this, you call the sheriff. You call the county attorney. They have people in the hospital. And in many instances, hospitals are mandatory reporters. And so then you get prosecutors thinking about, well, wouldn't it be nice if we could force everybody to call us to volunteer all this information? I urge you vote no.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just had a question, perhaps for the legal minds in the body. I get with regard to juveniles. I had a situation that was not unlike what my friend from the Charlotte County relayed to you here a few minutes ago, and that is, you know, we were having quite a wrestling match in the living room one night, me and the two boys, and they were getting the better of me, and we were having a great time, and pretty soon one of them rolled over and kind of winced a little bit, and ultimately, that evening, when he was trying to brush his teeth, he realized that he couldn't really squeeze his hand. So I said, well, we probably better go get that looked at. And we went down to the emergency room, and by golly, they determined that he had broken his wrist. And only upon driving home later that night, having gotten that casted, did I realize exactly what my friend was pointing out to you, that five different doctors had come to talk to me. And five or six or eight different people had come to talk to my son. And my curiosity is, now fortunately, he told the same story to every one of them. And, just like I told him to. No,
But, you know, you kind of turn white when you're driving home. I realized that, my God, you know, they thought that I had hurt that kid on purpose. So that's the scary part in a bill like this to me is, and tell me if I'm wrong, I mean, if it's a juvenile, does that mean that this health care provider has to make that call? Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, this bill came through our committee. The information we've got on it, twofold. Under federal HIPAA law, the release of private health information is restricted unless the state has a violent injury reporting statute. So the feds prevent us from using common sense unless we pass a law like this. Some doctors are concerned they may have violated federal privacy laws that call police to report a gunshot wound in the ER. This bill makes it clear a doctor may call if they choose to. It's a permissive bill. That's what the sponsor says. And I think that is accurate when you read it carefully. And I would ask the attorneys in the Senate in particular to join me at looking at the specific language. On page 2, you have where they're talking about healthcare practitioner sentry provides medical services, patient may, and page 2, line 7, may immediately make a report. And then you have item B on the top of page 3. No, any healthcare practitioner authorized to report in subsection A section shall make a report to local as follows. And the way I interpret that language is that the mandatory part of it is that this is how you make the report. It's not whether you make it. That's clearly on page 2, a may. This is if you're going to make the report, here's how you shall do it. And you have then I, and the information there. I think that's the way it was intended. I think that's the way it actually reads. But if that is confusing to the legal profession, let's clean it up on second reading, because we do have a problem with what the feds have passed.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I read it differently. In fact, you look at lines 7 through 8 on page 2. It says, certainly you may make a report, but it does not refer to subsection B. In fact, it refers to C. And then you have in section 1 through lines 1 through 17 on page 3 that says, if you're authorized, you shall make it. And if it's not a legal requirement, it's certainly a duty. And when you look over on the bottom of page 4, it goes back to say nothing relieves a person of the duty to report. This is a statute that if you happen to, it creates duties. Those duties have consequences, and failure to do the duty has consequences, and incidentally, legal effects for failure to do it, liability.
Senator Perkins.
Just to add on to that, I concur with Majority Floor Leader, and I think I'd further explain it this way. It says may immediately make, and there's three types of reports that you may make. And so you're authorized to do any one of those three. Romanet 1 on page 2 and Romanet 2 on page 2 are specific types of wounds that only Romanet 3, the only thing that may not allow you to report is if the person doesn't consent to the injury that's a result of assaultive or abusive conduct, if the victim agrees. So, you know, as I read that, you're authorized to make those reports. You are authorized because you may do it under 1, under 2, and under 3 if the person agrees. And if you're authorized, then you shall make the report. And I think that's what the Majority Floor Leader was referring to.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 15. Say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Pursuant to...
You have to have the vision.
Vision having been called, all those in favor of Senate Bill 15, please stand.
Well, it says with the Senate Bill 15.
Charlie.
Yeah, exactly. You can't give consent.
Six. All those opposed, please stand.
Is that okay?
Pursuant to SR 11-5, House Bill 15 has failed a standing division vote. A roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2 excused. Anderson District 28. Barnard excused. Bebout. Burns. Case. Christensen excused. Coe. Cooper. Kraft. Dockstader. Driscoll. Americh. Esquibel. Geis. Hastert. Hicks. Hines. Johnson excused. Landon. Meyer. Nicholas. Nutting.
No.
Perkins.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Rothfuss.
No.
Schiffer.
No.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
No.
President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 6 ayes, 20 noes, 4 excused.
House Bill 15, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to SR 11-5, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 35. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 35, Search and Rescue Operation, sponsored by Representative Gingery, and Act relating to search and rescue operations. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 35, Search and Rescue Operations. I hope this bill doesn't go quite as like the last couple have, because actually it's a pretty good bill. I don't know if I'm yielding to anybody. I'm getting a look from the good senator from the wonderful Star Valley.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was waiting to get up in case he passed one out to somebody else like the last time. House Bill 35, Search and Rescue Operations. Members of the Senate, search and rescue operations are conducted under our Wyoming sheriffs. The sheriffs set up the search and rescue volunteer teams with their counties. Search and rescue volunteers are unpaid volunteers. They're unpaid. Now, there was a recent case in Teton County where the county sheriff was sued regarding a search and rescue operation. And from what I understand, what I'm told here with this material, the lawsuit was handled accordingly. However, the volunteers were all sued individually, the search and rescue member volunteers. So search and rescue volunteers are presently grouped with deputy sheriffs in the Wyoming Governmental Claims Act. This bill, House Bill 35, moves search and rescue volunteers to be in the same immunity statute that includes volunteer firemen and nonprofit volunteers. So a bit of protection for our search and rescue members. That's the bill.
Question.
Any discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those, excuse me.
Page 2 as to why the definition changed for public employee and what the repealer is.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dockstader.
If you give me a minute, I could look it up, or we could come back to it on second, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Flader.
And Madam Chair, I'd be fine with on second reading for another question I have, which is, since it says no compensation in there, how does that, most of the time people volunteer their aircraft, but yet they get paid something for the aircraft. And so is that considered compensation, and therefore they don't fall under this statute?
Question.
People, as I read what's happening is that currently these activities would happen. They would be governmental employees covered under the risk management, and that would be called covered. These folks would be covered under the Wyoming risk pool for local governments, including the aircraft, and so there would be, a limit of liability of not more than $250,000. It looks like we're saying these folks, we're going to take them out of the risk pool, so there's no insurance available for the victims, and you move it over to the immunity. And I guess what's wrong with keeping them in the risk pool with all the other public employees? They're right now they're covered by the Wyoming risk pool is the way I read it, and what we're doing is repealing that so that you get now immunity. And so if you have a search and rescue person, he goes in and he wrongfully intubates you or he puts the needle in, he gets immunity and there's no insurance. There was always a cap on liability and there was a risk insurance pool. So now it looks to me like we're switching it from what we call the WARM program to immunity, so the poor guy that just got stuck gets nothing.
Senator Bevout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The question I have, too, is you have under the coordination of a county sheriff, and if I read this correctly, then you could be an individual engaged in search and rescue, but you may not be coordinated by the county sheriff, so then you're out there on your own, and now you're taking away the immunity, the protection under the Governmental Claims Act. There's kind of a big hole in this thing. I'm trying to figure out what we're really trying to do here.
Mr. President.
Thank you. To answer one of the questions, which is what is the repealer? You have to go to the Governmental Claims Act. 139-103, which is repealed, is specific in terms of what a public employee is, and Romanet D, or subparagraph D, includes individuals in search and rescue operations under the coordination of the county sheriff and so forth. So, but what the majority floor leader said is true. We have put those individuals underneath the Governmental Claims Act, saying, you know, if we screw up as a government entity and somebody gets hurt by that, then we provide coverage. We provide up to $250,000 in damages. By doing this, what you're doing is you're taking them completely out of it. There's no compensation necessary for the victim, and what you've done is give just straight-out immunity. The reality of it is that every time we come down here, it seems like every session, somebody wants immunity. And I guess that's just not the way we've operated our civil justice system. Not everybody has immunity. And that's why we have the Governmental Claims Act. Because before, you could not sue the king, period. And you can't sue me because I am the king. Where's my crown? But that was the old common law out of England. And we said a long time ago that that's not fair, that the government, when we screw up, we should be accountable. And we've limited that to $250,000. I think that that's appropriate as it is now.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, maybe one of the attorneys can answer this question. Are people who are sued individually under the Governmental Claims Act in this situation, Is there any immunity after the $250,000? And I'm assuming there is, but that would be a good thing to know.
Senator Case.
Madam Chairman, I think we're seeing a few things that go a little bit too bumpy in the night here. But what this bill is doing is taking volunteers under the coordination of a sheriff that are a part of the organized part of the search and putting them, treating them like we do firefighters and other volunteers. Volunteer firefighters, Madam Chairman. With respect to people that aren't under the coordination of a sheriff or, you know, you just go out there and help in the search, you have Good Samaritan protection. That doesn't change. This is if you're working under the direction of a sheriff. And indeed, the president was correct in that the piece is being pulled out of the Governmental Claims Act. That's the repealer. And I can understand the concerns there. But I kind of fail to understand what's wrong with treating volunteers operating, in Fremont County, we have trained search and rescue people that operate under the provision of the sheriff. They're no different than the volunteer fire departments. The people work hand in hand, and this seems to me like it's an appropriate place to place it, Madam Chairman. It doesn't involve people that are just out going out on their own. You have to be coordinated by the sheriff, and it treats it the same as the volunteer firefighters who perform services. Seems appropriate, Madam Chairman.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Let's go back and kind of see what this bill does and doesn't do. I don't think we're going bump in the night here. If you go, we have to start out at, and you don't have this in front of you. If you want to open your statute book, you can. If you go to 1-39-104, which is in the Governmental Claims Act, this is the way it reads. A governmental entity and its public employees, that's the key term, public employees, remember that term, while acting within the scope and duties granted, are granted immunity from any liability for tort, except as provided in 139-105 through 139-12, which are various provisions of the Governmental Claims Act, and limited by 139-121. And so what we're doing here is you keep in mind that what's happened is that I think that answers the question. If you're a public employee, then you're granted immunity except for this $250,000 we're talking about. The state would, if you're at fault as an agent or a public employee, you would be under the you're covered under this act. You're granted immunity except for the extent of your wage, which is $250,000. What the bill does in the repealer is if you go back one section to 139-103, you have in there under the definitions of public employee, and you're going through a number of sub-paragraphs, A, B, C, D, you get down to D. D includes individuals engaged in search and rescue operations under coordination of a county sheriff pursuant to some other statutes and some provisions of some other statutes apply for purposes of damage resulting from bodily injury, wrongful death, or property damage caused by their negligence while acting in the scope of their duties. So what you're doing is you're repealing that. You're taking them out so they will no longer be public employees as considered under the Act. So they're not going to be any coverage for the $250,000. And then what you're simply doing is simply provide them blanket immunity so that there is no immunity. There is no cause of action. There is no claim. They have immunity for what they do. And it's a policy question. If you think that's the right thing to do, then obviously you want to vote for the bill. But what you're doing is you're removing them from any, and moving the state, which has to cover them under this act, from any ability for someone who's wronged because they screwed up, from getting any recompense for that. The recompense, we've argued this one before, we've kept it at $250,000. Above that, that individual continues to have immunity if they're a public employee. And so the total limit that you have as a search and rescue person who operates under the coordination of the sheriff, you have immunity except for the $250,000, which is covered by the state. And this bill, it changes that all around. You're no longer a public employee. You're simply a volunteer, and you have clear immunity.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, on and against the bill. Folks, what you're seeing here is that, and Albany County is probably no different than most of your other counties, there are search and rescue teams that are trained personnel. These are folks that go out and they're trained in search and rescue. Most of them, a lot of them are firefighters part-time. A lot of them are folks that have just gone through first aid equipment. And if you and your family are up in the mountains and you're hurt or something and the rescue team comes out, they actually kind of take over the operations. And they don't come in and say, hey, we're just volunteers, run with the luck. Your assumption is you have trained people. And if they get in there and they commit malpractice, the state says, fine. We have what's called the local government self-insurance program, local administration, and that pool then covers the liability. So if you have a loved one that they go up and maybe they give them a shot or that they shouldn't have done or give them the wrong shot or they pull something out of their arsenal and they create more damage, then we have a liability pool up to $250,000. And now what you're saying, and that's the point, these people were trained. They're trained by to take these positions. If they want to come in and say they're just volunteers, they should walk up to you and say, by the way, we're volunteers. You might want to just call 911 and they'll bring a life for flight helicopter up here. That's not what happens. These people are under our window. We recognize it, and for years we've covered them. And if they commit a medical error or they search and rescue error, we're prepared to pay for the damages up to $250,000 out of the pool. And on the Appropriations Committee, they'll tell you that that pool is well managed, there's sufficient resources, and there's no evidence that there's a drain on that pool sufficient to cause us to have to revise our plan. I'd urge you to vote no on the bill.
Senator Hines.
Madam Chairman, I was in the committee, and as it was explained at the time, it all seemed fairly correct. But I've forgotten all the details. I know I have on my notes that someone representing the county commissioners is supporting it. And what I'm thinking of, as I'm trying to recall on page 2 there, when we're extending it to a volunteer engaged in search and rescue operation under the coordination. And what I am trying to recall, and I think I asked a question, if it was out in the country and they were looking for a person or a wreckage or whatever it might be, if I was in that area and had equipment to help, and if I called in and volunteered my services so the sheriff was coordinating it or he had okayed me to go look at it, if I would, I could then be covered. And I don't understand or know the current liability, but what I've been thinking, if a person like an individual volunteered to help and notified whoever was in charge, the sheriff department or whoever was in charge of the search operation, then that person would get this liability protection. And like I say, I'm guessing the former county commissioner from that area that is involved could answer these questions better than us that seem like it came from one area. So I guess what my thoughts is perhaps it would be best to move it to second reading anyway and see if that individual could help us out on the problems they had in that area where they have an awful lot of search and rescue work in the mountains.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That may be a good suggestion. They did originate out of Teton County. We still have the question regarding the aircraft from the good senator from Campbell County, and just ask you to move along to second. We get some further answers. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 35, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is uncertain. All of those in favor, please stand.
Those opposed? House Bill 35 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 36. The reading clerk will please read the House bill.
House Bill number 36, Property Offenses, sponsored by Representative Gingery, an act relating to offenses against property, was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Madam Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 36, Property Offenses, and to carry this great little bill, I yield to Senator Escobel.
Senator Escobel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I ask for your favorable approval on House Bill number 36, Property Offenses. And when you first look at it, it looks seems to be a little bit confusing, but it's really a simple bill. It just basically changes the various forms of larceny to one form of a crime, theft. And there's a handout on your desks which basically explains what the bill is about. And my name and the president's last name is also on that handout. And it basically, what this bill consists of is it's to address a situation that occurred about 9 months ago, a Supreme Court decision. It was a Wyoming Supreme Court reversed a recent larceny conviction and urges the legislature to change the statutes because there's different forms of larceny and it was getting a little bit confusing. So that was changed to include those elements in one form of theft. Justice Burke, in the opinion, urged the legislature to look at getting rid of the separate larceny statutes and, as I stated previously, adopt the theft statute, which this bill does. It also removes the stealing fuel and rustling into their own separate statute. It does not change those statutes or those crimes. It is primarily just giving them their own statutes. The bill also amends the word larceny to theft in certain statutes, and in statutes that deal with prior crimes, it adds theft to the list that includes larceny. The Supreme Court decision was issued May 31st, 2012, so it's a pretty recent decision, And when this bill was prepared, it was also prepared with the assistance of the Attorney General. I stand open for any questions, and if I can't answer them, I'm sure the good President of the Senate can assist me in that behalf. But that's the bill.
Mr. President.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, the guts of the bill is 63402. We're just changing the definition with regards to larceny, to theft. It was the request of the justice who wrote the opinion, Justice Burke, that most states have gone to the term theft rather than we have different kinds of larceny, like larceny, and then there's larceny by Bailey and so forth. And what happened here in Cheyenne was it happened at a restaurant where you had codes that you would enter in so that you could charge, and one of the manager had a certain code, and one of the employees knew about the code, and what he would do was enter the manager's code, and as a result, he was taking the difference and putting it in his pocket, and they charged him under larceny, but he didn't really take anything from the employer, but he was actually pocketing the tips and so forth. So by doing this, what we've done is simply to modify the theft, the larceny statute. And then the rest of these things are all nothing has changed, none of the penalties, nothing else. We've just taken them out of the larceny and moved them into their own separate statutes. Urge your favorable consideration.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion, that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 36, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 36 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 41. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 41, Wild Bison Licenses, sponsored by Representative Gingrich, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, and Kraft. Excuse Senator Driscoll. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Burns?
Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 41, Wild Bison Licenses. There are no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation on the bill, I ask that you call on the senator who is also known as the Great White Hunter of the Star Valley.
Senator Dockstetter.
Yes, I got this one as well, Madam Chair. Okay. House Bill 41. Wild bison licenses. Members of the Senate, there are three bison herds in Wyoming. The northern Yellowstone bison herd is in Wyoming, but it's wholly within Yellowstone, and it migrates out to Montana, so it's not hunted in the state. There's a small herd up from near Cody, as I understand it. That's not big enough to open a hunt. And this bill primarily deals with the Jackson Hole bison herd. The Jackson Hole bison herd primarily remains in Grand Teton National Park and winters in the National Elk Refuge. The herd was started by the New York Zoological Society and was kept within a fence near the Jackson Lake Lodge for some years, but the herd has grown and escaped their enclosure. By 1980, the herd had grown to 50. By the year 2000, the herd had grown to 1,200, but the management goal is 500. Through the hunts, the herd is now at 900, but it looks like they need to start trimming the herd back more, so not enough bison are being taken during the hunt to get us back to that 500 management goal. What this bill does, House Bill 41, it will reduce the license fee for cow-calf to $250 for residents, $1,000 for non-residents. Bulls will remain the same at $400 for residents and $2,500 for non-residents. And it's the hope is that this will encourage more people to hunt the cows and calves, which the managers of this herd feel needs to happen. So presently, you can only shoot one bison per lifetime. This keeps it the same, one bull per lifetime, but this allows for a cow-calf to be shot every 5 years. And hopefully this will encourage more hunters to be successful than they have in the past and get this herd back down to their management goal of 500. That's the bill, Madam Chair.
Senator Vebout.
Chairman, I understand what you're trying to do with the cow and calves, but are you changing the way it's handled now by saying if you are fortunate enough to get a bull, that's it for your lifetime? Is this a change? Is this an existing law? And if it's a change, why are you changing it? I can understand the cow calf, but this seems like an addition to that.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm curious whether there's a fiscal note attached to this that I don't have, or what financial impact this would have with regard to hunting fees collected.
Yeah. Madam Chair?
Senator Dockstetter.
The fiscal note is on the original bill, $29,000, Game and Fish Fund. And as far as the question, it's my understanding, and I'd be happy to clarify it, that it's still, nothing has changed there with the one bison per lifetime, the one bull.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor? Oh, I'm sorry.
My question probably would go to someone that works all the time on the Game and Fish Commission, but does this have any impact or does this have anything to do with those, I call them wild buffalo, bison that are privately owned and herds? Is that a separate area that where that would be addressed?
Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, a couple of questions here that I'll answer. Start with the good senator from Campbell County. Absolutely nothing to do within statutes. Anything that's kept in captivity and private ownership is listed under the wild or under the livestock statutes as bison. Anything that's publicly hunted is listed as wild bison under the statutes. And currently, you're only allowed one bison, period, whether that be a cow or calf. What this effectively does is allow you in your lifetime to shoot one bull bison, but a cow every 5 years if you're lucky enough to draw. So it changes it to try to address. They're trying to get a handle on the reproductive portion of the herd over there, and that's to do that through that female harvest. So, and the reduction in the license fee was trying to encourage more people to apply for those cow permits to get a better harvest on them. So that's the purpose of the bill.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion, the one the Committee of the Whole rise to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 41, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 41 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 42, the reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 42, Land Use Planning, sponsored by Representative Gingery, an act relating to land use planning. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Madam Chairman, thank you. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 42, Land Use Planning. Madam Chairman, what this bill does is to repeal a section of state law that we don't use, which is the State Land Use Planning Commission. It was actually recommended on our archaic laws list a couple of years ago that somebody tackle this and repeal it. In doing that, we also, there are two county sections, Madam Chairman, that where you can have land use planning. One is called a Chapter 1 section, and the other one is called a, I'm sorry, it's Article 1 Planning Commission, and the other one is an Article 2 Planning Commission. They're put in at different times. The Article 1 Planning Commission is not used by anyone, and predated the Article 2 Planning Commission. So if you can see on page 3, Section 2, those repealers are the Article 1 Planning Commission that would go out of the bill. That's in the powers of counties, Section 18. Don't panic. There's an Article 2 Planning Commission right behind it is what everybody uses, and that remains, of course. Madam Chairman, back kind of to the main bulk of the bill, there was a state land use planning commission established. To my knowledge, it was never, ever, the people weren't appointed to that. It has never been used, and they were supposed to promulgate plans that the counties were supposed to follow, the locals were supposed to follow. So what the bill does is remove all of that land use planning provisions except for this one section that you have to have, 9831, where it's you can see the key here, page 1, line 12, 98301, development of plans, says all local governments shall develop a local land use plan within their jurisdiction. Old statute, Madam Chairman. And then you can see the crux. The plan shall be consistent with established state guidelines and be subject to review and of approval by the commission. The commission is used in that instance, Madam Chairman, is the State Land Use Planning Council, which we don't have. So you see the problem? So, Madam Chairman, we had to define a local land use plan in that section so that they can be the local government plan shall be consistent with the local land use plan. And that's just to make it all work. It's conforming. Madam Chairman, I think I've done the bill. Be happy to answer any questions. It doesn't have any effect on anything because we don't do this.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 42, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 42 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 119.
Getting along. House Bill 119, Department of Family Services Program, sponsored by Representative Gingery, an act relating to the Department of Family Services. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Madam Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 119, Department of Family Services Programs, and to walk through this fine bill, I yield to Senator Escobel.
Senator Escobel.
Madam Chair, bring House Bill number 119, Department of Family Services, ask for your favorable approval. And this is a pretty simple bill. It relates to amending the Juvenile Justice Act, the Children in Need of Supervision, and deleting some references to specific institutions and updating references to the food stamp program. As you look through the bill, instead of references that's been used for some time with one of the programs is a food stamp program. Well, that's been changed to Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Employment Program. And those changes were made through the bill. Some of the other references where it talks about, like on page 3, line 15, commitment to the Wyoming State Hospital or the Wyoming Live Resource Center, those have been deleted. And instead, included a residential treatment facility. And those are some of the changes that had to be made. So we basically updated the statute. And if you look through the entire bill, those are basically the changes that deletes Wyoming Life Resource Center and Wyoming State Hospital and its place. Refers to it as a residential treatment facility. And the other changes, as stated previously, it changes the food stamp program to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance. That's basically the changes, Madam Chair. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them, but that's basically what it consists of.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's recommendation that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 119, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 119 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our recommendation is House Bill 127.
House Bill 127, Drivers, Licenses, Veterans Designation, sponsored by Representative Gingery, an act relating to veterans. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Fladen. Senator Von Fladen, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Fladen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass on House Bill 127. There is a standing committee amendment. Could I ask that it be read in at this time?
House Bill 127, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 22.
And Madam Chair, I move the Standing Committee Number 1 to House Bill 127 to explain the bill further. I call on the Great White Hunter of the Afton Valley area.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're moving from Bison now to a special veterans designation. I bring you House Bill 127, Driver's License Veterans Designation. And essentially the bill opens up with setting a procedure for placing a designation on our driver's licenses for our veterans. And now this is for our honorably discharged veterans. The designation will be a V. I did a handout here. It's in your box. It shows how the V would fit on the driver's license, where it would be, its location, and so forth. The Veterans Commission, on page 2 there, will have oversight of all of it. Veterans will have to have the designation, as I noted earlier, of being honorably discharged. And many of the states around our nation have already started to adopt this. YDOT will not have to review any of the paperwork. YDOT will get verification back from the Veterans Commission and insert the V. And there is an administrative cost here of $10,000, and essentially that's what it sets it up for, is veterans are continually requesting documentation that will allow them to be identified as a veteran. This gives them the opportunity, it puts it on their driver's license, they just pull that out, and it shows them as an honorably discharged veteran with that red V on the Wyoming driver's license. 30 states are doing this, 6 states considering it, and that's kind of the background on the bill, and would ask for your favorable consideration.
Question on the amendment?
Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, are we on the amendment or are we on the bill?
On the amendment.
Okay, I want to speak on the bill.
Are you ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Van Slateren's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 for House Bill 127, please say aye. Opposed, no. Amendment number 1 has passed. We are now on the bill. Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, actually, I can understand why you would want a designation like that, as long as it's universally recognized. You get various veterans discounts at motels and other things, and that actually makes sense to me. What I'm trying to figure out is, on the back, why would you state what they're a veteran of, whether it's Vietnam, Korea, Desert Storm or whatever. I don't quite understand what the public benefit of that is.
Senator Dockstader.
Chair, really the only specific reason that I understand it is just it shows their designation of service.
Senator Van Slateren.
And actually, the bill doesn't address actually putting on the service branch, but the picture shows you that there is room to do that if should they choose to do so, and I think those rules and regs are still being worked on.
Senator Rothfuss.
Madam Chairman, I'm curious to know whether or not we're opening the door to the next license plate approach, where we're just coming up with another thing to have designations. Am I going to come back here next year with a UW designation on my driver's license? Exactly. My colleague from across town will be the fifth person or the third person to get that designation, depending on how quickly he gets in line. Are we going to have the same rollout of designations that we have for licenses and then eventually have to end in an amendment where we provide a blank space on the left-hand side of the driver's license to ensure that anybody can put anything they want next to their face? If there is a specific and genuine purpose that makes this perfectly unique and ends the conversation, that's one thing. If this is just opening the door, I really need to know that.
Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, I don't know if anybody here knows it or not, but I don't particularly like the license plate designations. But actually, this does make sense to me. There are a lot of benefits, whether they be discounts or whatever, for veterans. And I'm trying to remember the name of the card. It's a 214 card or... 214 card, a discharge card. This actually keeps them from having to carry that around. Once it becomes universally recognized, that B on there should eliminate the requirement to have the card, because the driver's license will tell anybody they need to know this is an honorably discharged veteran and therefore qualifies for the benefits that any veteran would get, and they get a lot of them. I mean, they deserve them, but there are discounts and things like that for it.
Senator Coe.
Madam Chairman, I'm just curious, you know, if you put the little V down there, what other states do this? I mean, if I go to Nebraska and I want to take advantage of being a veteran, do they say, can I see your driver's license? See if you got a little V in the right-hand corner? I guess that's one of my questions. What other states do this?
Senator Cooper.
Madam Chairman, I don't know the answer to that, but I will point out the fact that one of the things that happens when you're discharged from the military is they take your complete military identification away from you. You don't have anything. They take your ID card. They take anything that identifies that. So anyway, when you leave, so in order to be able to get some of these benefits that are available to you now, you need to have something to identify that. One of the requirements of this is to provide what they call the DD form, 214, stands for Department of Defense, and that gives the conditions under which you were where you were discharged from the military under, and along with a bunch of other things like medals, ribbons, whatever, and a bunch of other stuff. But anyway, that's why the veterans have asked for this thing, so they would have some sort of identification. It's hard to carry around. The DD-214, by the way, is a 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. It's probably that has it's a form, and both sides of it are completely filled with different information as usually, and it'd be, you know, you could wear that thing out in no time, folding up, carry around in your pocket. Matter of fact, some military folks actually you're allowed to record those at the local courthouse, even, and they do that sometimes, so they'd never lose it.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Along that same line, maybe my colleague from the western part of the state could answer. As a veteran, is that the reserves count in that form as a veteran? Are they inactive or active? I was just trying to get a definition on that from staff, but I'm just curious if you know the answer to that. And so then, if you have been in the reserves, would you be eligible for a V-like on this particular license?
Not sure about that, the answer to that question. I only know about the regular military service, and I had to serve 3 years in the reserves when I finished my enlistment, but I just simply got my honorable discharge certificate at that time, so my DD-14 was given to me upon separation from the service, so I'm not sure about what to tell you on that.
Senator Landon.
Madam Chair, real quickly, I don't recall during testimony in front of our committee anything with regard to the other states. I think that would be pretty easy to find out. I would suspect that this is a program that's probably being requested nationwide, and I think that goes to the good question from the senator from the Northwest. So, but that's something I think we can chase down for the Senate. Thank you.
Senator Dockstetter.
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up. We have 30 states have some type of veteran ID option, and those options are either on their state driver's license or a state-issued card. And what we're asking for here is a specific designation on their driver's license. That's what they use when they're out there traveling, and they can use it for various situations. It's a red V. It shows they serve their country. And the question is, why do we do this? Simply because they have served their country, and they allow us to show up and experience democracy like this and pass votes on legislation like this. I ask for your support for our veterans and for this bill.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Van Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 127, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 127 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. President, that seems to clear the desk. You You have heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. Motion carried.
Reading clerk, read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 6, do pass. House Bill 7, do pass. House Bill 8, failed to pass committee of the whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 15, failed to pass committee of the whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 35, do pass. House Bill 36, do pass. House Bill 41, do pass. House Bill 42, do pass. House Bill 119, do pass. And House Bill 127, do pass, amended. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Senator Nutting.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried, and the report has been adopted. Signing of enrolled acts. House Enrolled Act 72, being original House Bill 123.
House Enrolled Act number 72, being original House Bill 123, an act relating to restaurant liquor licenses.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 72, being original House Bill 123. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 73, being original House Bill 151.
House Enrolled Act number 73, being original House Bill 151, an act relating to trusts.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 73, being original House Bill 151. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 74, being original House Bill 190.
House Enrolled Act number 74, being original House Bill 190, and act relating to public defenders.
House Enrolled Act, I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 74, being original House Bill 190. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 75, being original House Bill 197.
House Enrolled Act number 75, being original House Bill 197, an act relating to decedents' estates.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 76, being... Wait a minute. I gave you two. I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 75, being original House Bill 197. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 76, being original House Bill 52.
House Enrolled Act 76, being original House Bill 52, an act relating to workplace safety.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 76, being original House Bill 52. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 77, being original House Bill 94.
House Enrolled Act number 77, being original House Bill 94, and act relating to the Wyoming Pharmacy Act.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 77, being original House Bill 94. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 78, being original House Bill 133.
House Enrolled Act 78, being original House Bill 133, and act relating to crimes and offenses.
About to sign House and Road Act 78, being the original House Bill 133. I have so signed. House and Road Act 79, being the original House Bill 215.
House Enrolled Act number 79, being original House Bill 215, and Act relating to state investments.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 79, being original House Bill 215. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 80, being original House Bill 249.
House Enrolled Act number 80, being original House Bill 249, an act relating to the administration of government.
About to sign House Enrolled Act 80, being original House Bill 249. I have so signed. And finally, House Enrolled Act 81, being original House Bill 68.
House Enrolled Act 81, being original House Bill 68, an act relating to the administration of government.
About to sign House Enrolled Act 81, being original House Bill 68. I have so signed. Ninja. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 25th.
Announcements, if there are any. Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I'll announce that the Conference Committee on House Bill 187 will meet at 8 a.m. Monday in the Mineral Committee Room. Also at 9 a.m. Monday, the Senate Mineral Committee will meet with the House Mineral Committee in room H18 to discuss interim topics. And your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet at 15 minutes after the noon recess on Monday to take up confirmation hearings. We will again have 6 hearings during that period. Thank you.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your conference committee on House Bill 55 will meet in 5 minutes. That's Senator Hines and Senator Cooper in S-13 with a like group from the House. And, Mr. President, your appropriations committee number 2 will have hearings on Monday, the 25th, beginning at 8 a.m. in room S-13 to conduct hearings on the governor's appointment of the couple for the Retirement System Board, one for school facilities, and the director of ANI and ETS.
Further announcements. Senator Nutting.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Mr. President, I'd like the Senate to recognize Senator Cooper for his exact, precise sense of timing.
Did you win the pool? Senator Cooper's buying dinner tonight. Any further announcements?
Did he win the lottery?
Any further announcements? Hearing none. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Amen.
The Senate stands adjourned until Monday, whatever day it is.
25th.
25th. 10 a.m.